how do you grow a company like Coinbase or Origin Protocol? And how do you continue to build in bear market? These are some of the questions that I ask Linus Cheng in this episode of Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. Linus is one of the most qualified people to talk on topics like this because he is currently Vice President of Product at Origin Protocol. And also he was head of growth and a director of product at Coinbase. He has had really high ranking positions at companies like Tesla and LinkedIn and Pinterest and so many more. And in this wide ranging conversation, we also talk about topics such as San Francisco as a tech hub, remote work, stablecoin, staking, farming, a future of NFTs, and so much more. Finally, I do not monetize this podcast with advertisements, but I have a favor to ask, and that is, can you please leave a review for this podcast on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with a friend? Hello, innovators, explorers, and risk takers. Welcome to another episode of the Web3 with Sam Kamani podcast. I'm your host, Sam Kamani. I am an Amazon best-selling author, a tech startup founder, and a strategic advisor to multiple Web3 startups. I'm here to take you on a journey to explore the world of Web3, all the risks, all the opportunities, and my goal is to educate you about what other people, the founders, the investors, what are they building? What are they paying attention to? So you can take advantage of it, so you can benefit from it. However, I would like to start with saying that this is not investment advice. I would still highly encourage you to do your own research. I have nothing to sell you. So with that out of the way, let's get into it. Linus, first of all, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to talk with you about everything that's going on in space and also what you're building. But before we get into that, I have a question for you. Whereabouts are you based? I talk with people all around the world these days. I have no idea who's based where.
Yeah, thanks for asking and thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. I'm in San Francisco. I'm actually a San Francisco Bay Area native, which we're more and more rare species.
Very rare. Extremely rare. You haven't moved to Tahoe or Miami or somewhere or Austin, Texas. Yeah. That's what was not happening yet, last year. A lot of people are back now. But yeah, it was interesting to see what was going on in 2021. And it feels like a lot of people are back. Do you feel like that?
I think so. I think just there's always going to be demand for San Francisco. It's a small city, perhaps just a different crowd, a little bit of less of the folks that were intending to just come here, work in technology for a couple of years and then move back. I think that remote work has opened up opportunities where people can just go anywhere, really. So I think that it's allowed for other communities to really pop up. I'm still really enjoying San Francisco and the community here, but I understand the critics.
Yeah. That's cool. So tell me about Origin Protocol and what you're building these days.
Yeah, absolutely. Origin Protocol, we've actually been around a while. We were founded in 2017. So this is not our first bear and bull cycle. We've kind of seen this rodeo before. And yeah, our mission today really is to bring the power of NFTs and DeFi to everyone. So Origin Protocol is actually the parent company. And so there's two main products and businesses, one on the NFT side. So I'm VP of product and business for what we call Origin Story. See what we did there? This is our NFT platform, which I'm sure we'll talk a lot about, but effectively we want to be, and we are the most trusted platform to help you run your Web3 business. We do that through NFTs and a variety of products and services that we provide there. The other side of the business is DeFi, where we offer fully collateralized yield-generating stablecoin. It's called Origin Dollar or OUSD.
Okay, yep. So I can see that there is the story.xyz or xyz and OUSD.com. Yeah, right. So those are the two key websites. And once again, what I'll be doing is I'll be putting the links to all these platforms, all your socials, everything underneath in the description, just in case if any listener misses it and they want to check it out, they can do that. But yes, please continue about your stablecoin, the yield generating stablecoin.
Yeah, sure. So on the yield generating stablecoin, a really magical product from my perspective, right? It's a stablecoin that you use it just any other stablecoin. You can send it. You can use it for payments. You can hold it in your wallet.
Yeah.
You can hold it on an exchange if you'd like. Most people choose to hold it on their self-custody wallet. And in order to generate that yield, you actually don't have to stake it. You don't have to put it in the hands of someone else to manage for you. You just hold it in your own self-custody wallet, which, you know, given the sign of the times and the things that have been happening over the last couple of months, self-custody, people are waking up to the importance of self-custody. So it always stays in your wallet and the balance grows every day. And that's through a technology that we use called rebasing, right? So what we do is with the underlying collateral that is used to back that stablecoin, you can always redeem that origin dollar for the underlying collateral at any point in time. So we take that collateral and we then put that in the bluest of blue chip DeFi protocols, right? So protocols like Aave, Curve, Compound, those kinds of things. And then we supply that collateral and then we get the yields, right? We harvest those rewards and then we basically take those rewards and we basically push it out on a proportional basis to the existing holders, right? So the OUSD supply is because of the rewards that we've farmed. And then basically if, for example, Sam, you own 1% of all the outstanding OUSD, basically your balance grows by 1% of the entire rewards that we harvested in that period of time.
So how do you harvest? Smart contracts. How do you harvest or how do you farm?
Yeah, so all of that is done through a series of decentralized and transparent smart contracts. All of these strategies are actually voted on by the community. So that's the power, right? This is not handing over money to any sort of like hedge fund or any sort of humans that are making investment decisions. What happens here is we've got a core team of developers that works enabling these strategies, but we also have open source contributors that actually also contribute to the strategies. All of our smart contracts are thoroughly audited by some of the best auditing firms to ensure safety and security. From there, a strategy will be put up for a vote by the community whether or not to be approved. And so let's say there's a new protocol we want to enable. That strategy is then put out there. We make sure the smart contracts are audited, and then the community votes on whether or not to enable that strategy. From there, on a weekly basis, what we do is we do a community vote on how to allocate the capital, right? And so let's say you've got 30% in this protocol, 40% in another protocol, et cetera. The community may vote to keep it the same. That's actually been fantastic for our yields. Or they may vote to adjust it a little bit. And so that's the beauty of decentralization. We can unlock the power of the community to understand where they want the...
So what does Origin or Origin Protocol get from running this?
So we also have a governance token that is the value accrual and the governance token for OUST. It's called OGV. And it baked into the smart contract, a portion of those rewards goes back as protocol revenue. And that protocol revenue goes back to the OGV token holders through rewards and buybacks and things like that.
Yep. So I'm just trying to figure out how the stablecoin works because there's so many different models for stablecoins. So I know the... like how, what they say with for USDC or USDT or any of those, how they work, they have assets of equal value, whether it's in US treasuries, or US dollars, anything, one to one. That's what they say. How does, then there are the alternatives to that, and that is the algorithmic ones. And so where does this fall, like,
Origin? So we're not an algorithmic stablecoin, for sure. Yeah. We're 100% collateralized. It's collateralized with the most common, the most popular blue chip stablecoins. So those are USDC, USDT, and DAI.
Yeah.
And so effectively what happens is if you want to mint an OUSD, you would supply one or more of those stablecoins and get an equal amount of OUSD. Basically redeem it one for one of those three underlying stablecoins. So it's backed one for one. If you trust those stablecoins, then you should trust OUSD because it's all transparent on the blockchain. You can audit our smart contracts. You can look at the on-chain data and see that it's one for one back with those stable coins.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. So they're one to one back. Cool. So, let's leave this. Let's talk about the story side of things. Yeah. Let's go deeper on the story. So tell me a bit more about the origin story or the story side of things. How does
sure.
that work?
Yeah. So a little bit of background on Story and Origin's journey in NFTs, just as back. We were one of the early innovators in the space relative to this recent wave of NFT mania. So in early 2021, we hosted and fully managed this First of its kind music NFT auction on behalf of Blau, the famous DJ who has gone on to fall in love with NFTs and started his own NFT music business called Royal, of course. But before that, it was he was partnering with Origin, where we were one of the key people that really onboarded him into NFTs and the power there. And with that, we actually did a record-breaking auction. I believe it was the biggest NFT sale up until that point. Raised about $12 million for him to create these first-of-its-kind fan collectibles of a music album that he had. From there, that was really the kickstart of many things. One, it really brought NFTs into mainstream consciousness, right? And so a number of world-renowned celebrities, artists, creators really woke up to, okay, wow, there's this cool technology here and a new way to engage with my super fans and create some value for them. And so we were from there powered a number of really popular NFT launches from world-renowned celebrities, including Paris Hilton, Don Diablo, the crypto native artist Trevor Jones, even viral internet videos like Charlie Bit My Finger. We actually auctioned a one of one for Charlie Bit My Finger and then deleted that video from YouTube, which was a really cool moment in history, bringing Web 2 and Web 3 together. And so we were really an early innovator in this space, paving the way forward for safe and secure NFT launches and making it more like acceptable for mainstream celebrities to really experiment with this new technology. Since then, though, earlier this year, we noticed a pattern of some of the more popular NFT kind of collections were really crypto native, right? We saw the rise of Bored Ape Yacht Club and a bunch of those things. And we also saw deeper and deeper engagement in crypto native fashions, Web3 first flows, transactions directly in Ethereum. It wasn't what we expected, right? We expected people wanting to not know, I don't really care, it's an NFT. I don't really want to deal with my seed phrase. I want to buy it with a credit card. But we saw the data of these people like really engaging deeply in these digitally native, crypto native kind of collections with, you know, undoxed teams, pseudonames. This was like something that probably I couldn't have predicted, but followed that user behavior. We followed the data and we created a marketplace protocol and user experience that would allow a lot of these crypto native collections to really launch and operate their own marketplace. And so that's our core flagship product today on the Origin NFT side. And we're seeing a lot of exciting traction, growth, and demand on this product. What it is, it's an aggregator, right? And so you would see liquidity from day one across all the major marketplaces, whether it's OpenSea, LooksRare, X2Y2, FTX, and more to come. But it also allows for native listings, so native trading. And these marketplaces typically live on the official website of the project. So as an example, one of our beloved partners was Pudgy Penguins. We partnered with them early on to help them build their official marketplace. They were able to basically create a home for their community to transact in a safe and secure way. No scam NFTs, only filtered down to official NFTs of their collection, right? And from there, we've added on tons of other features and value adds to their community to allow them to really run their business, right?
Yeah.
NFT analytics, for example, for folks to go deeper on, hey, what is this community doing? Who are the top holders? Who are the famous holders? How should I be thinking about this if I'm a big holder, a small holder, or even a prospective buyer? And from there, we are continuing to partner with a number of folks. We've seen how this is a core technology that is a first test case for where NFTs and Web3 can. One of the things that I was most proud of in the last couple of months is we also partnered with a giant in the Web2 real estate technology space called Roofstock. And from there, we actually partnered with them to build their official marketplace and enable a real estate actual home in the physical real world to be represented as an NFT. And so we facilitated the first NFT sale of a real world property on a peer-to-peer marketplace.
Yeah, no, I met them at the LA Blockchain Summit a month ago. Yeah, it's a very cool story.
Yeah. And so that's a taste of what we're working on. And we're just really excited to see how Web3 and NFTs are really just a foundational technology. I think we're seeing a turning of the tide where people are looking at NFTs potentially and saying, oh man, they're just cartoon animals. And don't get me wrong, I love PFPs and cartoon animals, but NFTs are so much more than that. And I think the real estate use case was just one example. And we're continuing to talk with folks in space, potential partners, cool stuff coming out soon of how we might take it further, of how NFTs can actually solve some real world use cases and really just expand how NFTs could add value in people's lives.
Yeah, that's very cool. So what's been the most challenging part for you in your role for Origin?
Yeah, I joined Origin in April of 2022. I would say that we started to see the market teeter a little bit, but we really didn't get into serious bear territory until a couple months later. And I think now that we're in the thick of it. Now, I'm no stranger to bear markets. I joined Coinbase in mid-2018 at the beginning of a very prolonged winter. And I guess to answer your question, I'm not going to lie, building in a bear, it's difficult, right? As much as I love to say, and I truly believe, and I say this to my team, hey, bear markets are fantastic for building, right? I genuinely believe that some of the best work that we did at Coinbase were seeds that we planted during the bear market when there was not a whole lot of hype. You weren't chasing down the next hot thing. You weren't chasing to fix things that were breaking because the site was crashing. It's too many people were trying to get in. It's a different time, but I will say that it's important to acknowledge how difficult psychologically it can be. And in particular, this feels a little bit different because of the Black Swan events. I feel that happened that were a little bit out of control, right?
Yes, we all know that.
Yeah, there's a macro environment, which, look, we can't control things like what the Fed does, but it impacts crypto sentiment and crypto prices. Now, those aren't everything, but what we've seen is prices are definitely correlated with user interest, user demand, and user activity, right? But beyond that, the Black Swan events that hopefully are more rare in the future, but we can't tell, really just mismanagement, misjudgment, or even intentional kind of just fraudulent activity from a handful or less of bad actors that really, first of all, that really sucks. That really sucks for everybody that was personally impacted, whether it's a customer's money, whether it's people's careers, et cetera. But really, this one feels a little different because of the sentiment and the fallout that comes from all this. And I think that the negative sentiment around crypto as a result of a handful of bad actors, when in fact, the vast majority of people that I work with are genuine, real people trying to build value for the space. And yeah, I think that is a long-winded way of saying, got to continue to remind myself on a daily basis why I got into this space in the first place. Gratitude, build up my resilience, because we will be back. Like this technology, this movement, it's just gone too far that we're not going back to the web two centralized ways. I think there could be ways that it can coexist, but I think this revolution will continue. We just might be set back a little bit further from a timeline perspective. And I think
That is so true. Since you've been in this space for the last 5 years or more, what has really worked when it comes to, I don't know, customer acquisition, promotion, marketing, whatever you want to call it, but what has worked like really well for you?
Yeah, fantastic question. I guess I'll go back to in the early days of building at Coinbase, there were certainly times where we felt like, hey, there's nothing we can do to control the charts, right? I've heard about your backgrounds in running growth marketing teams where it's all about the data, right? What can you learn? Yeah. How do you move this metric? Now, I led growth at Coinbase for a good amount of my time there. And it's really difficult when the demand for your services is not constant, right? So your effort is not always correlated with the ability to move a metric, right? And so it was really around reframing on what are the things that we can control. And we created metrics and frameworks to be thinking about things called low market dependence, low market dependent transactions, low market dependent revenue at Coinbase. Now the high market dependent stuff, right? The things that are related to, okay, Bitcoin price jumped. You're going to see a bunch of users sign up. You're going to see a bunch of trading. That's fantastic. That's gravy. Make sure that if customers want your services, that those flows are super optimized, that customer experience is amazing, capture that opportunity. But what's more important is thinking about the low market dependent stuff, the things that will be recurring and repeatable. That might be a smaller portion of your overall business, but focusing on how you can grow that more predictably has been a fantastic North Star that has served me well at Coinbase and things that I take to Origin and thinking about. What are the things that are common use cases, needs for customers that transcend prices, right? And what are the products that can be relevant regardless of market conditions that can keep people coming back or even like passively earning a yield, for instance, right?
Yeah.
The power of defaults. If you got it in your wallet, if this is serving you well, you trust it, it's that set and forget it. Those are the kinds of things that create that long-term stickiness.
That's very cool. But when it comes to tactics, do you have any tactics that you'd love to share that have been really successful for you? It could be at any time in the last 5 years or last 3-4 years.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. I think maybe I'll just share an experience here of building Coinbase Earn. So Coinbase Earn, Earn.com actually came in through an acquisition, Coinbase. Yeah. I started by Balaji Srinivasan.
Very famous in the space. Yeah, yes.
Very famous in the space. Quite a force in the space. Ended up being the Coinbase CTO. Now, once he came into Coinbase, he had a new idea for Coinbase Earn, which is effectively airdrops as a service. That wasn't the official way we talked about it, but I think it's a good way of describing it, right? So going to a lot of these asset issuers and thinking about, okay, like you've got coins to distribute and Coinbase has the largest audience of crypto interested KYC verified users. How about we distribute these coins for you? And what started off as, hey, this could be the world's best growth hack of free money to give away. For example, we had about $100 million worth of XLM to give. What we saw was, okay, you market it as almost some way to entice people to sign up. That'll give you a one-time bump. Right. Unless you're thinking about fully integrating it into the product.
As a utility. Right? Yep.
That's right. But over time, what we were able to see was if you pair this with education, if you pair this with use cases, what we found were people were enticed by the number. Oh man, I could earn up to $10, $20, $60 of cryptocurrency by doing these things. By basically framing it as education, we actually saw a couple of very surprising things. One is after you added the education, think about 80% of people either held the tokens or bought more, which is very surprising. A very stark contrast to before that, when most people were basically saying, hey, this was free money, I'm going to sell it in my local currency and then see you later, Coinbase, right?
Yeah.
And then what was also surprising was adding what we called advanced tasks, right? So advanced tasks included things like, okay, you can earn $5 by watching this video and learning about this protocol, but also saying, hey, you can actually earn a lot more. So like $10 or $20 by actually, for example, what we did with Compound was you can actually open up a position on the Compound protocol. And that was a very complex thing, right? For them to basically send that token to a self-custody wallet. Most of those customers didn't even have one of those things. To teach them about seed phrases and things like that. And then from there to actually do an on-chain transaction. And then from there, being able to measure that, attribute that to the user, and then give them the rewards. Pretty difficult product and technical challenge to make that a smooth flow. But any way you cut it, lots and lots of friction. What we found though, was people found intense value in just going through that education, that post product flow surveys actually said that most users actually enjoyed the educational aspect of it and the mission part of it, of being onboarded into crypto deeper than even the like monetary rewards. So long-winded way of saying, hey, rewards are a fantastic way of engaging users. Don't get me wrong. That's tried and true. That's not a surprise to any listener of this product, right? Programs, discount codes, or even in crypto, of course, airdrops are going to motivate the heck out of customers to go do a thing. But what we've seen time and again is if you don't manage your airdrop responsibly, if you don't think about the long-term value, people are just going to take the money and run.
Yeah.
But if done right, you could find yourself with holders. This is like the dream, right? You give them free money and they actually buy more and they become advocates of your product and service and feel like they've been brought along in the mission. And I think that we're early enough in Web3 where the audience here, yes, they're motivated by money. Don't get me wrong, but they're also motivated by some grander vision, right? That this is a better way that out of this, taking power out of the hands of centralized institutions, whether it's governments that you have an issue with, whether it's big companies like Meta or Google that you have a problem with. This is an alternative to that. And I think there's a lot of people that are philosophically aligned with that. Oh, and by the way, I can make money too. And I think that if you combine those two things, like you've got an unstoppable combination of bringing people along on your mission. That's something that has just stuck with me. It's not a tactic that I can say, do this and you'll win, but I think it's like the holistic strategy of how you should think about monetization incentives, as well as like, you know, it's the goal of Web3, right? Bringing on your most passionate supporters as shareholders, token holders, and you can actually build that through a beautiful product.
Yep. That is very cool. And you said it so well. Education is such a big growth hack that so many companies and so many founders are still sleeping on. I feel like, as you said, those who did educational stuff, they went on to buy more or became like advocates or evangelists for your product at, in that company or for that product. Yeah, I firmly believe that as well. And I see this more and more when you go to so many platforms, they have an education portal these days where they teach you everything from what is DeFi to the basics of stablecoin to base or what is ZK rollups or all sorts of new tech and stuff to just to educate people on because this is all so new. We have to still realize most people don't know what MetaMask is or digital wallet is or anything like that. On the street, go and ask someone, what's your MetaMask number? They would have no clue. What language are you speaking?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, what's interesting here is I think that education is very important for the stage that we're at, just given like the state of Web3. Right now, I think that we have failed our job if we're still talking about education a couple of years from nobody. When you talk about what is a blockchain, how does Bitcoin mining work? How does proof of stake work? All those things. Yeah. It would be like, in order to use the internet, I would have to teach you what HTTP stands for,
or TCP/IP means.
TCP/IP works. Yeah, exactly. Totally. That's the stage that now, when I say education, I don't necessarily mean, hey, you have to be a Bitcoin cryptography expert in order to use this technology. But what it is, what it is important is, how do people trust this thing? And I think trust can come from education, right? For some people, it can also come from, hey, let me teach you about like why I care about this thing, right? Why, like the why of blockchain or decentralization. And I think that speaks to a bunch of people as well. But I think that when we talk about the billions of people, they're not interested in how TCP/IP works for the internet. They're looking for the funny Charlie bit my finger video on YouTube. And I think that we've seen sparks of that magic moment sprinkled throughout, but I think that we need to do a better job as an industry making that just all the time. Every interaction that you have with Web3 or DeFi or NFTs should be a magic moment. And I think that we're far away from that.
So how can we do that? How can the industry do that, achieve that? What would be your hack for that?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a hack. I think it's going to be a lot of hard work, specifically on NFTs. I think what we've got to do is a couple of things. We do have to, unfortunately, there are a lot of scams out there, right? And so that's a major problem. And until products and technology get safer and better, we probably do have to invest quite a bit in just general safety and security education, right? Things like, this is a seed phrase. Write it down, put it in a safe space. Don't ever take a picture of it and upload it somewhere. Like these kinds of.
Oh, so you're saying that I shouldn't tweet about my seed phrase, that this is my seed phrase, tweet about it? No, I'm just kidding.
I think you should. I think you should DM it to me, and I'll let you know. Also kidding.
Just kidding.
Totally. But it's these kinds of things that I think is a stop. We need to stop the bleeding because what we don't want is folks coming onto this space right now when it's frankly not safe. To be in NFTs and to be in crypto, unless you know what you're doing and you need people to guide you, right? And then that is to prevent people from having just that first really sour experience where they get scammed or they lose their NFTs and they quit, right? And so that we're not going to win those people back if they have a really bad first experience. So that's one thing. But I do think that technology is improving, right? Ledger, for example, this morning, they had an announcement of a new product where they got the designer, Tony Fadell, who was the designer and lead for the original iPod. And he built a beautiful, it's just like an envy-inducing product here for a Ledger wallet, which makes the old version look like so ugly by comparison. Just this like the ugliest looking USB stick, but that's what basically was people's experiences. And I love that people are thinking about beautiful, desirable experiences for things that can seem as boring as just security, right? And so I think that those are the kinds of experiences that we want to keep building upon, where over time, it will just become commonplace, right? Commonplace to, for example, I know a lot of people still use the same password for everything, but it's becoming more and more common for people to use password managers and to rotate
like
passwords.
Like 1Password and LastPass.
Yeah, LastPass, those kinds of things. And I think that it's getting to the point where it's not super technically complex or super nerdy or anything to be taking care of security hygiene. And I think that the NFT or the crypto space broadly will also move in that direction. But that was a digression. That's on the security side, just making sure that people have just not a bad experience. That's number one. But two, what we found is like the power of incentives or the power of the fear of missing out and things like that. If people will jump through hoops to just get that exclusive thing, get that DeFi yield that is like too good to be true and those kinds of things. And I think that we need to create those magical experiences that are also safe, like all the time. That should be like the norm in crypto. And I think also last thing I would say is really making it so that there's a variety of use cases that this technology is everywhere, right? So that people can't point to a couple of bad experiences or a couple of scammers and just be turned off by the whole thing.
Yeah.
For example, bad things happen on the internet all the time, right? You know,
email scams and everything.
Email scams. Yeah, I probably owe a reply to the Prince of Nigeria at this point because he's been hitting me up. But
he told me he sent you all the money. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. Now, if my entire experience with the internet was just facing all these things and weird, scammy pop-up ads and like a weird thing that downloaded, right? Like, I would probably be turned off by the internet too. But the fact of the matter is I encounter that less than 1% of the time, right? Maybe 0.1% of the time I'll see something a little bit sketchy or unsavory on the internet. But for the most part, I'm having a great time, right?
Yeah.
I'm able to do all these sorts of things, keep in touch with my family, keep in touch with friends, see what's going on in the news, say something funny online, right? All these things. And I think that if crypto has a diversity of use cases where it's just, you know, just commonplace, common thing. Yeah. And then the positive way outweighs the negative. Then I think it'll just create just a much more welcoming experience where what people will realize is this is just a technology. This is a technology that can enable a bunch of experiences. Most of them are good because humans are fundamentally good. And some of them are bad. And here's ways to protect yourself, right? Just the internet, any sort of technology can be used for good or bad. It's not the technology itself that's bad.
Yeah. And also, I believe like it's also like in any tech, in anything, there is a ratio of scam and bad things to the utility. On the internet, the ratio was very different when it was new. And now there's a lot less compared to the utility and compared to how much we use for the other things. Internet, it's so much bigger that the scams and the bad things don't matter as much. As you say, 0.1%, same thing. It's like driving a car. Are there car crashes? Do people die? Yes, all those things happen all the time. In fact, hundreds of thousands die every year from car crashes. Yeah. But the utility is so big and the personal experience is so different. The car crashes, very rare comparatively. Same thing in crypto. Right now, the ratio is very lopsided. The number of scams is so much more and the utility is so much less compared to the other things like automobiles or internet. That when that ratio changes, I think adoption is normal. It will be a common thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I'm dating myself a little bit, but I do remember early on in the days of the internet, people didn't think it was safe to put your credit card into a website. And that was a huge barrier for e-commerce. Then came along PayPal. Like PayPal's value proposition was to be able to facilitate transactions between strangers on eBay, right? Because like people didn't want to buy things on a website. And I don't know if you remember this, but there was a company called VeriSign.
Yes, I remember VeriSign. You had the VeriSign logo and every website had that logo.
And people were like, oh God, thank God there's a VeriSign logo. I feel safe transacting.
It meant nothing actually in reality.
Yeah, it didn't mean anything. But for some reason.
Like people joke around now these days. It's like the Certic smart contract audit.
Yeah. But I think though we're potentially on the cusp of creating a little bit more of that trust in the space. Minting contracts. I shouldn't have to check a Telegram group or a Discord group. Oh, it's safe to mint. There should be standardized tools and basically like ways that are human readable, like for the normies to be able to understand like, yep, this is pretty safe. Wallets like MetaMask or Coinbase wallet, if they're smart about it, they potentially have an opportunity to surface, hey, this is a risky transaction. Are you sure you want to do this? Or, hey, no, this is pretty safe because we've seen like many successful transactions go through. It. There's ways that basically on the internet, the browser protects you for the most part, for the most common scams. And I think that where you transact in Web3, there's a responsibility for the builders in the space to be able to create those scaffoldings for users, not necessarily restrict them from doing things, but just create some warnings or some guidance to say, are you sure you want to do this?
Fantastic. I have just last two questions. I know we are getting close to our time, but just last two questions, since a lot of the listeners are early stage founders. If this was not a question in 2021, it's a question in 2022. And that is, if an early stage startup is looking to raise funding, do you have any advice for them? What should they do?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I have any silver bullets here. But I guess I would say we are still seeing, of course, select companies out there are still able to raise. But if it's very early stage, yes, what I would say is cash is king, right? Be very clear about a couple of things. The timelines for your fundraise may actually be pushed out a bit. So don't expect the crazy times of 2021 or 2020 of just, hey, no due diligence. People are just throwing checks at you. If you are in that position, count yourself as lucky, but just build that into your timelines. That thing might take a while. The second thing is be much more realistic about cash needs. I think that there's going to be a lot more scrutiny about, okay, how many folks are you hiring? How much runway is this? What are the specific milestones that you need to prove in order to get to that next round, and be super clear and make sure that those are achievable with some sort of stretch and ambition? Because I think that the follow-on rounds are probably some of the more risky ones, right? Seed rounds, Series A rounds, I think people generally are like, hey, I want to get in early. They understand that bear markets are where some of the best unicorns are built. But it's the Series B and the Series C that are probably the most risky. And so really de-risking that by making sure that you have clear goals for what you want to achieve with this round of funding before you can go out for your next round is going to be of utmost importance.
Fantastic. That sounds great. And my final question is that, do you have are you looking for anything as for Origin Protocol or any of your projects, whether it's customers, users, team members, looking to hire, looking for investors, whatever, feel free to share your ask.
Oh, absolutely. We're in a fortunate position that we're still pretty well funded in terms of our treasury. Our treasury has only grown over time. So we're still hiring modestly, but we're looking for kind of that sharpshooter team, not looking to grow a 100 plus person company, but really just rock stars in every seat. So we are hiring engineers, product managers, marketers, biz dev, et cetera. If any of this excites you of building in Web3 and NFTs or DeFi, reach out to Origin Protocol. Second is, if you're interested in chatting about NFTs, whether you're a creator, an artist, a Web2 team, looking to see how you might want to navigate NFTs, we'd love to talk to you.
That's fantastic. And yeah, I think that's about it. I'll put all the links in the show notes and wish you best of luck. I think what you guys are building is super interesting. And I'll be sharing all these things with everyone in the community.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's fun.
Thank you so much for tuning in and watching this or listening to this episode of the Web3 with Sam Samani podcast. You know the drill. Leave a comment, please subscribe, or share it with a friend. Now, if you are building something really interesting in this space, then reach out to me. My DMs are open. I'm at Sam Kamani on Twitter or on LinkedIn or on TikTok or on any platform. Just go and search for my name. Reach out to me. I would love to help you. I would love to have a conversation with you if time permits. So, having said that, I want to wish you best of luck to whatever you are building. I know that about 35 to 40% of my listeners are founders themselves. So I want to say best of luck and go build that next innovation.